Welcome to Physicians Taking Back Medicine, a new podcast sponsored by Medical Economics. I'm your host, Dr. Rebecca Bernard, and I'm here to bring you inspiring stories from day-to-day physicians just like you who are working to improve the healthcare system. Today, we are talking about physician mental health, which is making headlines right now thanks to the new HBO Max medical drama, The Pitt. If you haven't seen it yet, the program follows a team of emergency doctors and nurses led by head physician Dr. Robbie, who is managing a chaotic emergency department with all the systemic problems that we face in healthcare. At the same time, he is battling symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder related to his previous experiences during the COVID-19 pandemic. News outlets have picked up on the powerful physician response to this program, which has many doctors saying that they feel seen for the first time and applauding recognition of the importance of physician mental health. In today's podcast, you'll meet two physicians who have been leading the charge to improve physician well-being for nearly a decade.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mona Massoud. I am a Greater Philadelphia area outpatient psychiatrist, and I am the founder and chief organizer of Physician Support Line, a national peer-to-peer support line that's run by volunteer psychiatrists nationwide who are unapologetically supporting their physician and medical student colleagues throughout the United States on the many intersections of their personal and professional lives.
I am Dr. Nicole Washington. I am a psychiatrist. I'm physically located in Oklahoma. However, I am licensed in 11 states. I was working on my master's in public health, doing a lot of research on physician mental health, physician suicides. We just weren't talking about it a whole lot. So I pivoted to a practice of physicians. Physician mental health was born essentially out of that practice.
While Dr. Massoud and Dr. Washington were already working on physician mental health, their work accelerated during the COVID-19 pandemic. Dr. Massoud explains.
Back in March of 2020, which I think we all identify in the United States as being a very crucial time for physicians navigating the pandemic. And it was the birth of the physician support line because I found, you know, myself discussing with colleagues, not just on this new virus, but also for the first time, perhaps, how we're doing. And how we are not only coping as physicians and this new role we found ourselves at, but how are we doing as human beings? It was a conversation that I think we gave ourselves permission to speak about.
Dr. Massoud said that many of these conversations were happening on social media.
We were all communicating whatever we knew about this virus and how we're coping. And what I found interesting in these conversations were that physicians were telling each other how they felt, but they were saying it in a very intellectualized way. And it was, you know, things like, oh, does anybody have a good lawyer they use for writing a will? Which, if you can read between the lines, they're saying that they're worried about their mortality. They're worried about not surviving this and what that would look like. And when I started seeing that, and other psychiatrists started seeing that, we were not only alarmed, but we knew that we had to address this before it took over us or it ended us.
Dr. Washington also noticed a need for increased physician support during COVID-19.
I bought that URL, Physician Mental Health, back when I started my practice in 2017. So I bought it and I thought, oh, I'll probably do something with this one day. So it sat in my dashboard for years, untouched, never thought about it again. As the pandemic was unfolding, I'm in Facebook groups with doctors and people are asking, like, hey, I need to see somebody. I'm really struggling. Does anyone know anybody practicing in, you know, Texas or practicing in Tennessee or practicing in Florida? And then you have 50,000 people come into the polls like, oh, try this person or try that person. And I thought, surely we have to have a better way of doing this. We need a central space for us to be able to go and to find a psychiatrist who is willing to see another physician. So that's kind of how it was born. It was in a random hotel room. I was on a locums assignment March 2020 when the world was falling apart. And it was in this hotel room that I was like, okay, it's time to pull the triggers.
In addition to using social media to learn about the problems that their colleagues were facing, both Dr. Massoud and Dr. Washington used the format to call on their psychiatrist colleagues to help. Here's Dr. Massoud.
I put out one of my own posts in these many social media groups saying, hi, I'm just a psychiatrist and I'm calling other psychiatrists interested in starting a support line for our colleagues who are just trying to navigate this pandemic. And the response was incredible. And it just speaks to, you know, the generosity of spirit and the sincerity of our colleagues.
The Physician Support Line was launched in 2020 as a free, confidential resource for medical students and physicians, staffed by board-certified volunteer psychiatrists.
Our hours currently are Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to midnight, Eastern Standard Time. They are available for medical students and for physicians on any part of that timeline, whether you're residents or fellows or attendings or even retirees. Anybody who has a shared experience of medicine is welcome to call that line. And just to kind of emphasize the purpose of this, it's not a doctor-patient relationship. This is peer-to-peer support. It's all anonymous. It is free of charge. And we don't report to anyone. You can call about any subject. We have talked about anything from being burnt out, if we even use that word anymore, to our frustrations with the healthcare system in America, also moral injury of what we thought we were going to be as physicians and who we turned out to be and how that feels. And we talk about family and we talk about marriages and we talk about loneliness and we talk about sleep and isolation and anything under the sun. It doesn't have to be a crisis to call. It really is more important that you're giving yourself permission to center your own story and center your own wellness. And I think that that is something that is so needed.
Dr. Massoud said that the purpose of the line really depends on what the caller is looking for.
What purpose this line has and the sustainability or the continuity that this line offers is really up to the person who calls in. If the person calls in saying, you know, I just need to vent this out because there's really nobody in my life that understands what I'm going through, then that can be the purpose of the call. If somebody, you know, maybe started off that way, but by the end of the call is saying, wow, this was so eye-opening to me on the benefits of working through something. And I didn't even know or wasn't even aware of what I was actually going through. I would like to continue exploring this. Then we have a number of resources state by state or nationwide for continuity of care. And so we can refer people for either therapy or for psychiatric care. We ourselves cannot offer continuity on the line because it is anonymous both ways.
This is where Dr. Washington's service, Physician Mental Health, comes in. Like Dr. Massoud, she used social media to recruit psychiatrists who are willing to help their colleagues.
To date, we have psychiatrists in almost all of the states. There are some states that we are lacking. I am working on licenses in some of those states and working on recruiting people from some of those states. So we have psychiatrists who have said, yes, put me down. I want to be a resource for my peers. And that's what we have there.
I asked Dr. Washington how physicians can know if they might benefit from taking that next step to working with a psychiatrist.
I think it depends on what you are looking for. One of the things I see is that people go to coaches when they really have mental health issues, because it's easier to say, well, I want to go to a coach because I'm having issues with motivation and getting things done and being assertive and whatever the reason is that you would seek a coach for. And that's fine. Some coaches are great and they can help you through these kind of little holes that we get into. But if you have depression or you have significant anxiety, you may need medication. Sometimes medication is going to improve the capacity for what you can get done in therapy and coaching. I think we just have to figure out what exactly is the root problem and then go from there. medication isn't needed for everybody. Some people can really benefit from therapy, especially if they have a milder, maybe mild to moderate depression, anxiety. Medication may not be necessary. But if we're moving moderate to severe, then we may want to talk about what your medication options are. You know, if your sleep is impaired and you haven't been able to get it into a good schedule, even with the tips that you get behaviorally from your therapist, we may need to talk about medication. If your functioning is impaired, if you are forgetting things for patients, if you are the person who used to be able to remember the last five patients you saw and then go get their notes done, but now you have to write everything down, or you forget things, or you find that patients are calling back and saying, Dr. So-and-so was supposed to put an order in for this, but I don't see it, and you're making mistakes like that, I think we should at least have a conversation about, you know, what's going on. Because I think functional impairment, so sleep is one functional impairment. And then if you're really, really angry, if the anger is interfering with your relationships, if you're starting to be biting with patients or staff, that might be a good reason to at least talk about, you know, if medication is an option. And of course, if you're experiencing hopelessness, suicidal thoughts, you are having the thought, people would be better off if I wasn't here, even if it's not active suicidal thoughts. So if you're even having those thoughts of my family would be better off if I were gone, or I wouldn't kill myself, but, you know, I wouldn't be upset if I had a car accident and just didn't make it, or if I didn't wake up in the morning. Those, all of those kinds of things might be reasons to see a psychiatrist and have a medication discussion.
Dr. Washington said it can be hard sometimes for physicians to recognize that they're having a problem.
I've seen enough physicians over the years to know that we are horrible at recognizing how impaired we are. You know, we do work at a really high level. We are used to functioning at a high level. We're used to running on fumes. I think a lot of times we're not doing great and we don't even know it because we just keep pushing through because that's the culture of medicine. So if other people are telling you, I think something's wrong, or you start to notice that functionally things aren't great, I would say go for it. I mean, we just aren't the best when it comes to us because we think that, well, that won't happen to me. Like I'm good. I even take care of quite a few psychiatrists who have said, you know, it took me a while to realize that I was depressed or I was having, you know, anxiety to the point that I needed medication. And we're in this every day. So I think it is not uncommon. Another thing, you think you're the only one, you think all your peers have it together, unless things are really bad or a person is just brutally honest. Most of us are not talking about how we're really doing. You say, hey, how are you doing? And we all say, oh, I'm fine. I'm okay. Oh, you know, living the dream. You know, we say those kinds of things, but we never really say like, well, you know, I'm really burned out. I got yelled at by four patients yesterday and it just took a toll on me and I couldn't sleep last night. We don't say those things. So I just would encourage you to go for it because I think we all have worked so hard to get where we are that I would hate to see something like some anxiety, depression, something that can be addressed and treated, take this from us because we've all worked so hard to get here.
I asked Dr. Washington how she approaches concerns that physicians have about stigma or repercussions from seeking help.
I will have doctors reach out to me and we'll talk and they'll say, well, is this private or can you not create a record or can this be kept from the board? So the first thing is I don't report anything to the board. Boards don't just come to me and say, hey, are you seeing and give me a list of doctors that they have licensed, right? You would have to have shared with them that you were seeing someone. I have yet to have a board revoke somebody's license because of depression or anxiety. I write lots of letters to boards. I've spoken to lots of board representatives. A lot of states are actually looking to change the way they ask the questions. A lot of them are moving away from asking you, have you ever been treated for any kind of mental health conditions in your life? You know, they don't need to know that at 15, your parents went through a divorce and you had therapy. They don't need to know that. They don't need to know that you lost a parent in your early 20s and you went to therapy because you were depressed. That's irrelevant to today and your practice of medicine. So I think a lot of states are getting on board with the questions, which is really nice to see, but we still have a ways to go.
Dr. Masood also talked about physician concerns over repercussions and the work that is being done to destigmatize physician mental health care.
Rebecca, thank you for bringing this up, because we can all preach a pretty game about being our own self-advocate of getting things done. And in an ideal world, that would be more doable. It is very real that we have systemic barriers to mental health, and especially for physicians. And that is something else that Physician Support Line have been working on with Dr. Lorna Breen's Foundation, as well as American Medical Women's Association. There's a few organizations that have been working on specifically the mental health questions on medical license applications, where it is unclear the disclosure requirements on these applications. What makes it tough is that there's not one federal licensing. This is all state by state, and each state has its own kind of wording on its applications regarding mental health. And some of them got it right. So this is not just a doom and gloom idea. Some of them have received and amended their application to reflect something that is an important distinction in how we view mental health. And I think this will be helpful for even ourselves when we're thinking about, you know, am I a good doctor? Is me suffering from depression or anxiety or something all of a sudden make me incompetent? And the distinction, and that we don't want in practice for seeing patients, is not illness. It's more along the lines of, is it an impairment going on that is stopping this doctor from delivering standard of care? So that is very different than a person who has experienced or is going through a navigating illness. And when we brought that up, there are several licensing boards that have changed their language to say, have you been diagnosed with impairment rather than illness? And so it's a work in progress. But what I would recommend, instead of just fearing seeing somebody, is that I would actually look up what's going on in your own state. And where you can do that is if you go to amwa.org. It has Humans Before Heroes is the name of this initiative. And it has state by state. You can click on your state and it will tell you the language that is used on your board and what is the most recent update on what they're doing regarding that. And the other ways you can also seek treatment without fear of repercussion is, of course, you can always call us and we can guide you too. But on your own as well, is that if you're able to do fee for service, or if you're able to do something that is out of network or something like that. And I know it's not ideal and it's not what it should be. And I recognize that. But that is one way to at least lessen the fear behind this.
Physicians that are seeking a psychiatrist can use Dr. Washington's resource, physicianmentalhealth.com, to find someone in their state. I asked her to explain what a typical treatment scenario would look like for a physician.
So visits would be typically monthly in the beginning. Once I have a doctor who's stable and doing well, then we spread those visits out. So we're talking every 3 months, because I know we're all busy. Our schedules are tight and trying to see somebody monthly. So we would spread you out like every 3 months, and in some cases, every 6 months, depending on diagnosis, how the person's doing, what the special circumstances. We will do every 6 months once they're really stable. And so it looks just like that. A lot of psychiatrists, though, I will say, a lot of psychiatrists are cash-based practices. Mental health reimbursement has been terrible for decades. And a lot of psychiatrists have just said, you know, I can have better relationships with my patients and more time if I just take cash and just see them and they pay out of pocket. If you are working with an accountant, you may talk to them about if that treatment can be something that can be written off. Probably would depend on how you're structured.
One of the benefits of psychiatric care is the availability of telemedicine services, which is offered by many of the psychiatrists on the Physician Mental Health website.
If you think that you need to see someone, don't hesitate to look and see who's in your area. Because we're doing tele, it may not be somebody who's in your city necessarily, which is great, because most of us don't want to see people that we may run into at medical society meetings or in restaurants or different activities around town, but maybe somebody who's in the same state a couple hours away. That's the benefit of telemedicine. It really allows you to continue to get that treatment, even if it's not, you know, in your area and you don't have to drive 2 hours to go do it. Before this, And before tele was popular, I've had people drive 3 or 4 hours from Texas or Arkansas to see me here because they didn't want to be seen in their town or their city. So I think this just opens up just a lot more flexibility, and I encourage you to take advantage of it.
I asked Dr. Masood to share the red flags or warning signs that a physician may need to reach out for support.
What I actually say is, you know, it's not even the red flags. Look for what I call the pink flags, like even something less than when you would really reach out. And what that means is that things that you enjoy are not as enjoyable. If you're seeing that the people that you want to be with, you're not wanting to be around them as much anymore, and you're seeing yourself withdrawing, is usually what I notice as one of the first signs that we're not in the best place. It's like talking to someone. I think we put this big banner like, oh, it's a call for help. Like we call it something that feels so drastic, but it's actually not. It's just almost like unburdening yourself, sharing it with someone else. Like, are you seeing what I'm seeing or am I overthinking? It's just like how we can't treat ourselves as physicians. Like we can't, right? Like in the end, we need somebody else to be more objective. It helps in that regard to kind of take it off your shoulders and let somebody else look at it and be like, yeah, you know what? This doesn't sound so good. And so that's when I say reach out to someone. And the physician support line, there's honestly no risk. It either it's helpful or it's like you're where you were when you called us. But it's really worth it. And I just wanted to conclude with this one thing I've noticed about these calls. When physicians call the support line, it's just so telling what happens, like the initial thing that they say, which is, I'm so sorry for taking your time. And I'm just like, oh no, this is literally called a physician support line. We have a real problem. And that is a systemic issue that's happening. And then within medical culture, we have a problem, right? Which is that we all remember at some point, whether it was in medical school or in our training, that we were applauded and acknowledged and encouraged when we did something that was very self-sacrificing, when we gave up something, when we took the extra call, or the one who missed out on important things. I remember, like, if a medical student missed out on something important, instead of saying, I wish you didn't do that, I wish you went, and we would have figured it out, we could have found another way to navigate it. They were applauded and seen as being a real doctor. And so these things are implicit because we don't even realize we're doing that, that we're applauding self-sacrifice. But it is something that we have all internalized throughout our training, that the best physician is the one that gives up the most. So many of these internalized ideas of what it means to be a good physician, at the very least, that's all we can do for you is be there as peers, as fellow physicians, reminding you that, yes, you have worth. Yes, what you're doing is incredible, and you as a human being deserve to be well.
You can learn more about the Physician Support Line at physiciansupportline.com and about Physician Mental Health at physicianmentalhealth.com. Thank you so much to my guests, Dr. Mona Masood and Dr. Nicole Washington. Thank you for listening to Physicians Taking Back Medicine, a new podcast by Medical Economics. I'm your host, Dr. Rebecca Bernard, and I hope to see you on the next episode.